We're back on the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. We're back to our usual Friday worldwide release schedule, which is good.
Look at that.
I know. It's good. I don't know. I don't know how to end a week without talking to you now. I just wouldn't. I just keep working. Just, I would never stop.
You would just, I don't think you ever stop anyway. You have an endless amount of podcasts and things. And
it is nearly endless. Yes. Weary sigh.
It is.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I am enjoying the tail end of what has been a kind of slow period, although technically Dan and I are still watching, Dan Feinberg and I are still watching lots of shows and trying to catch up and...
Yeah.
So it only slows down a little bit, but I appreciated it. I appreciated a little bit of a dip in February.
You know, I felt like this week I got a little break, which is good because I had my dog got sprayed by a skunk, so I spent an entire day of the work week doing nothing but cleaning things instead of working. So
yeah.
I'm glad it was a lighter week this week.
Yeah. That's one of my big worries.
This is why podcasts don't have smell.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about
this.
That
podcast would be canceled if you could smell the people talking today, let me tell you.
Do you smell like skunk?
Everything smells like skunk, Tim. Everything. Everything I own smells like skunk now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But, you know, this is not the skunk podcast.
Not
although
yet.
I may start that podcast.
Yeah, that might be a good one.
Yeah. You have one review that posted in the last week. It was Prey. You want to talk about Prey?
Yeah, I think, you know, I liked Prey. I liked it.
It's John Sim, right? On BBC America. It's
he's
buddy.
The guest star.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's, the thing that I liked about, well, I'll be back up. The thing about that to me was interesting about Prey from the start was that, you know, I thought, okay, here's another British series. We kind of love these things out of hand. And, you know, is there a possibility that we give them more, you know, we cut them more slack because they are British? I mean, we tend to like their cop shows no matter where they're set, and they are kind of all sometimes similar. So I was kind of going back to see if I had a little bit of that prejudice in me, and I probably, because sometimes we like them because they're different and they have accents and they seem different than what we're doing over here. And I really liked Prey, but I did come to the conclusion that it's a newcomer, a guy named Chris Lunt who wrote it. Newcomer for me. He doesn't have any notable credits at all. But it's executive produced by Nicola Shindler, who does Happy Valley, Last Tango in Halifax, and other ones. So it's clear that they did a U.S. thing. They have a young guy who's writing a show, and they bring in a writer and a creator who's, you know, more experienced and skilled, and puts her over him, and he lets him develop his show. Well, the fact is, they cast this thing amazingly well, but his writing kind of breaks down in the process, and I struggled with that. But the ultimate take was that an actress named Rosie Cavaliero, in A Young Doctor's Notebook and Little Dorrit, British actress. She's really great. And there's two, Prey is basically, it's 2-3-episode seasons, if you will. Mm. It's 6 shows, 2 different storylines, same woman. So you could say, yeah, it's a 6-episode series about this woman. She plays D.S. Susan Reinhardt. But the stars in the first one is John Sim, who's a complete favorite of mine. He's so amazing. Life on Mars, State of Play, Village, etc.
Yeah.
And then the second batch of 3 episodes is Philip Glenister, who was in also Life on Mars, Ashes to Ashes, Mad Dogs, tons of stuff. These are British actors who've been all over the map.
So good, too.
Yeah, and I don't know a super lot about Rosie Cavaliero, but she's, which sounds like the least British name you could ever come up with, but she's really good. They built a series around her, and the thing that I liked about it, other than, hey, here's these great actors in a fast-moving 6 hours that, if you look closely at the writing, the plot doesn't really hold up, but the actors are so good, was that I kind of got a sense that Lunt... this newbie, and probably overseen by Nicola Shindler, who has real experience in England, they're trying to create, I think, especially if they keep going forward, a kind of a prime suspect series. Hmm. You know, because you have this mid-career woman who struggles with his divorce, and she's eating too much. She's, quote-unquote, according to BBC America, eating her feelings. And it's following her through this male-dominated work space, which is very similar to
Prime Suspect.
Prime Suspect, yeah. Sorry. And I want to follow that series. I'm like, yes, let's do that. And so I hopefully that will happen going forward. Although one of our smart mini readers who follow me on Twitter pointed out that they are actually doing a prequel to Prime Suspect, and that is even more exciting. Although because I didn't know about the prequel to Prime Suspect, one of my favorite series of all time with Helen Mirren. And so I was super excited, but so that'll be nice. But also, you know, if the writing picks up on, because I think this guy's pretty good, Chris Lunt. He just, you know, not all of it adds up. People make a lot of dumb decisions that they would not normally make. And maybe there's a future there. So that was the only thing that was interesting to me about that series. And, you know, there's a lot out there. You could skip this and come back to it later. It'll always be sitting there.
Right. I kind of like that format idea. We were talking about the, you know, can you do a super serialized story in 22 episodes, or is that just too much? And do you get too much SAG? I think this is just like how Sherlock has the 3 2-hour episodes. This is an interesting take on it, which is they've got 2 3-hour blocks telling 2 stories. That's maybe that's a good length for that kind of storytelling.
It was, and I think the caveat there, and I'm with you on that, I like shorter is becoming better. The caveat is I think that the reason that the writing didn't work is he had to rush through it. And his idea was to, like, let's get these people on the run. You know, John Sims' character is a cop who's being framed, basically, for the murder of his wife and child. And he goes on the run. So it's the thrilling part of the first 3 hours is that John Sim is running around England. And so it's kind of fun, but then once you find out kind of why it all happened, you're like, that didn't really hold together as a plot. Although I loved watching John Sim run around England, but so, and I think it's maybe the guy needed more episodes. So there's that. That's a caveat for these shorter ones.
Hmm. We should mention too, because it came up when we were talking about those. That shows with big episode orders should maybe break in the middle and treat it like 2 different story arcs. That we got the feedback from the ye old masked scheduler, who you guys hunted out on Twitter. Uh-huh. And Gotham actually is marketed itself that way, and I think that's very smart that they had the rise of the villains, and they had like the revenge of the villains or something like that, and they built it like a season finale. And went away and are really marketing the second season as a different kind of shape. And I think that's not a bad idea. I kind of gave up on Gotham in the first season because it didn't do it for me. But, you know, good for them for Rise of the Villains and Wrath of the Villains and having an 11 episode. See, it's like comic books. I almost said issue there. 11 episode arc, you break, and then you come back a few months later with a new arc to take you the rest of the way. I with some kind of obvious continuity, but, you know, building your story and having it be this 11 part story, and then you take a break and then tell the next story, the next half. I think that's good.
Yeah. I think there was true to that. There was not proper credit given for that because they are doing that. I think we've noted that it was a good, I think previously we've noted here on the podcast that it was a great idea to do the Rise of the Villains thing.
Yeah. And I think I just took my eye off the ball because I was thinking about the CW shows, which haven't done that. And,
right.
and that's really where I feel it because I do watch those shows is that I really wish Flash and Arrow would take a piece out of Gotham's book, honestly, and try to not take one villain and stretch them out over 22 weeks because you end up, it's you know, it's really saggy in the middle. So.
Yeah, and to that point, I think that battling with the masked scheduler, which I've done my whole career, he's great, he's fantastic. I think the perception was, hey, we're doing that, or Fox is doing that at that time, which is true. I missed that on that. That's true. But my point was, you can't go away for, you know, 4 months and 2 months and come back. Not in this current one, unless you can't break up the series and come back unless you have a second, you know, you're rebooting it in a different way.
Relaunching with the next, it's essentially it's 2 seasons in 1.
Yeah, which is what we, and I think that for, you know, very few shows actually do that. I think more commonly it's one arc.
Yes.
Broken up by 2 months' time, and I don't think that really works in the modern era. And I think the ratings will bear that out. But yeah, he's right. I mean, if you get a show that does it, I think it's a better, there's a better chance for that. And you know, I have, as I noted to him, I've done that with cable too. In fact, it drives me insane when you have a 13 episode cable season and they stop at 6 and come back. That's the worst.
You just are getting your momentum and then it breaks.
They did that one year
with Doctor Who, and I remember complaining about it because it was just like you never got the pace that you wanted. I should also, speaking of the Masked Scheduler, I added to the show notes a little bit late last week the thing that I was sort of likening, which was this idea. He wrote a blog post where he told the story of Fox figuring out how to schedule 24 so they could fit all 24 episodes in a continuous run from January to June. I think they had to go all the way into June instead of just exiting May sweeps. And it was a great idea because that show got so much momentum from doing that. That it would have lost, and that it did lose when it sort of went away for a few weeks.
Yeah, and that exactly, and that was kind of revolutionary. Where you would say, well, we're actually not going to end in May when the TV season ends. We're going to keep going. And that freaks out a lot of executives. So I'm happy they did that.
Yeah, it's Oscar weekend coming up. Do you have any thoughts at all about the Oscars? Or do you just share my. I watch it. It's like a car crash. I do watch it, but I sort of dread it.
I think that I sometimes watch it, but in the last, God, I would say this is scary, actually. In the last 4 years, I'll bet you, and that's a long time, so I'll say 3 for sure, but possibly 4 years. This could be the fourth year coming up. I have not seen enough shows to even have any of it make sense to me. I just don't get to watch movies because of television. And I think this year, I don't know how many I've watched. I know I watched Mad Max Fury Road. That's about the only one I can remember. So that's not really a way for me to watch the show because I'll like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's like we're not reading a book, you know? So, or it's like watching the Emmys and not having a television set. So I probably will not watch it. I'm not reviewing it, thankfully. And of course, whenever we were tasked with reviewing it, I think Dan's going to review it. It was always, how does it play as a telecast rather than did they get the picks right? So that, and you know, and I've done Emmys before where I've had to, you're reviewing the host and the structure of the series rather than who won. So, I mean, in that sense, I could probably watch it. But I might be better served, stepping out and going to catch at least two of the movies that might be nominated. I'm so far behind. So, to answer your question, probably will not watch that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's a chance that it will be brilliant because it's Chris Rock and because of what happened with the nominations being all white people.
Yes. And that, in that sense, brilliant. I will watch that for sure.
Or it could be totally neutered and not.
I think he'll go off. I think that they deserve it. In fact, in some perverse way, I think they want him to beat them up.
I think that's exactly what's happening. Is they can't control the nominations and the electorate, at least not without changing the rules and all of those things. But one thing they can do is make the show critique the result, right?
Right. Exactly.
So maybe that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a pop culture moment. So I will definitely watch that. But yeah, when it gets into who won what, I've seen like nothing.
Yeah, I've seen. I realized with delight that I've seen 3 of the 8 Best Picture nominees.
Really?
Accidentally, basically. But yeah, I have. So
you've only seen 3 of the 8. You're a busy guy. I've seen, I think, one of, I don't even know which 8 are nominated, which is probably a bad thing.
Yeah, that I had to look it up too, which I feel bad. I used to, back when it was the old days and there were only 5 of them, it was a little bit easier. But yeah, I've seen Fury Road and The Martian, and then we just watched Bridge of Spies the other week. So
yeah. See, again, not the thing. I'll probably rush out to see some of those. I can remember because this, you know, even prior to the advent of peak TV, I do remember running out in the middle of the day to catch a couple of series that were, you know, by the time they get to the Oscar nominated, you can kind of catch them at your local theater in the daytime. Yeah. And I would go down to the Elmwood.
Some of them are on video, and then you can go, but you watch things for a living, so it's really hard to say I'm going to go watch more things now.
Right, exactly. So.
all right, well, it's happening. People are probably aware that the Oscars are happening. So there it is.
I think they are.
I had a couple of updates for you from my side. First off, the first tragedy of the baseball season, pitchers and catchers have just reported in Arizona. But the first tragedy of the baseball season has happened, which is that Hunter Pence, outfielder for our beloved San Francisco Giants, appears in an episode of Fuller House, episode 10. And this prompted me to watch episode 10 of Fuller House, the Netflix relaunch of the not classic, not funny sitcom. There, I said it. Sitcom, right. Full House. And I could last about 30 seconds before I had to stop because it was so terrible. But here's my report about, I can't say it. Hunter Pence acts as you might expect an athlete to act, which is badly, but it's not his fault.
Right.
He was not any worse an actor than the other people on the show, which
the paid
I think
actors
more problematic. Uh-huh. And my report about Fuller House, I hope, here's the thing. I assume that people watch Full House on Netflix ironically or nostalgically. And I can only think the only way to watch Fuller House would be ironically. It makes your bog standard CBS sitcom look super cutting edge. Like, it makes The Big Bang Theory look crazy cutting edge with its faster pace and multiple sets and competent actors and pop culture references. But whereas Fuller House is like, it is slack, it is slow. Every laugh line, there's a pause and like a look at the audience for the big like laugh track laugh from the audience.
Wow.
It's so awful. So that's my, but I watched 30 seconds of it because I wanted to see Hunter Pence appear on that episode, mostly so I could make a joke on Twitter about it, which I did.
Yes, which you did. I saw that and I was stunned. I was like, oh God, thank God I don't have to see that.
It's not good. It's really not good.
And, like, and this is just another, because there's other examples, but this is another example that people don't get it in your head that Netflix only makes great shows.
Yeah. It's like British TV. The BBC doesn't just make great shows. They make terrible shows. They just don't show us their terrible shows because they're embarrassed, quite frankly.
Exactly.
And then I have one other thing, which is just to mention, it's a Star Trek update about that new Brian Fuller running the Star Trek series. There was a big report today in the Hollywood Reporter, in fact, about Nicholas Meyer, who was involved with, he wrote or co-wrote Star Trek 2, 4, and 6, and directed Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 6. And he has been brought on as a writer-producer of that show, which, you know, we'll see how actively involved he's going to be. I don't know where he is in his career and if he's retired or semi-retired, because, you know, Star Trek 2 was like a long time ago now.
Yeah, right.
But I think it's a great sign that they want somebody who's involved with probably the high point of the entire franchise to get the show off the ground and be a part of it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I take note of things that I have no connection to oftentimes, I process them in the way that you process, you know, ephemera in the pop culture. I'm like, okay, I guess that's a good thing because people who know this say it's a good thing. So yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's my report to you as well, which is, I think that's a good thing. I mean, who knows if he will contribute episodes that blow people away or anything like that. But I think having somebody who did Star Trek II in the room when they're putting together the show and deciding who the characters are and what the storylines are, that can't be a bad thing to do, to go back and do a little callback to history. And Gene Roddenberry's long gone, but this is the guy who made Star Trek II, and that's a good sign. So get him in the room and see what happens.
Cool.
So it's as we speak, it's the last weekend in February. We're gonna hit leap day here in a couple of days. March, is there, you said that February was a little bit slow. Is March picking up the pace? Are we gonna have a bunch of stuff coming on in March?
Yeah, we are. And you know, it's funny because Dan and I are going to get together probably on Monday, and we're going to do a kind of a back and forth about the, you know, we have to address Viceland. So Viceland, the cable channel where you're going to be able to see all these shows from Vice, they've got by the way, you're going to have to check the box here.
Okay.
The Viceland shows that we have are, one's called Balls Deep. The other one is a food show called Fuck, That's Delicious. Flophouse, Gaycation, Noisy, which is a music show, and Weed a Kit, like in a weed show. So we're going to, instead of reviewing those six shows separately, Jen and I will watch those and then, you know,
collaborate on a Viceland.
Yeah, so you can see how excited we are for that. Dan has actually, of the notable March stuff, what I will say is Dan has reviewed Happ and Leonard. People can find that on the TTR site. He liked that. That's great. It's good to see that. It's a good cable series. I am reviewing, it'll post on Monday. I've already reviewed it, which is great because you can just save yourself time. If you've seen anything for Joan Allen's new series called The Family on ABC, where this kid goes missing for 10 years, presumed dead, and reappears, it is terrible. So you can now erase from your mind word The Family. So, but what's notable coming up in March is House of Cards, which is notable because I think neither Dan nor I really wanted to watch that because in our mind it's kind of played out. But that's coming up. The other ones that are, there's a lot of shows. So let's put it this way. There's a lot of shows. There's stuff like, you know, there's a new Chiller has a new original series. It's their first original series called Slasher. Bates Motel is coming up on the 7th. Damien, yeah, of course, the spinoff of Exorcist.
Yeah, isn't the Omen?
The Omen, right? The Omen, yeah. So,
easy Omen fans, easy. We call it
back off. Omen.
Write a letter,
Omen fans,
Omenists, Omenifics.
Yeah, there's the. You know, it's funny. There's a lot coming up. There's Underground on WGN on the March 9th is one that stands out. That's the probably how I should. I'll tell you the ones that look like they might be good rather than all the ones that you're going to probably skip over, like Of Kings and Prophets, which I'll be reviewing. Ah, terrible. Mm-hmm. So the ones that you should probably pay notice to is on March 9th, WGN is doing a thing about the slave, a whole slave story called Underground. No, it didn't receive any buzz at TCA, and so people were like, okay, this is not going to be good. So there's that. I'm going to review a new Netflix sketch series called The Characters, where they took a bunch of comedians and they basically do a sketch series. So we'll see. Flaked on March 11th, same day that Characters comes out. Flaked should be interesting. I won't be reviewing it, but Dan will. Flaked is a new Netflix series, and it's from Mitch Hurwitz, who did Arrested Development, of course. And it's, I think that it'll be one of those ones where you're like, okay, can it make it? So, because Job returns to television and not on a CBS series. So, we'll see with that. Let's see here. Anything else that's good? There's so many that are bad. The American season 4 on March 16th. That's probably pretty good. We'll see that. I'm going to review that. Happy Valley. A lot of people loved Happy Valley. I don't know if you watched that. Did you watch that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Happy Valley was a Netflix series, I believe, that I watched the first couple of episodes and didn't like it and bailed out on it. And then a bunch of people were like, oh, because it's like Prey. It's another British series where there's a detective. And everybody loved it after I watched the first two episodes and didn't. So I'm going to go take a look again at season one, and then I'll be reviewing season two. I think Daredevil fans will on March 18th will be happy to know that Dan is reviewing that, given that I reviewed it the first time and hated it.
Yeah.
So that's on the 18th. I'm sure that Daredevil fans already have that marked down as their day that they'll be binging on that. Also on the 18th, Netflix has a David Lynch documentary called My Beautiful Broken Brain. And I've been reading a David Lynch art book of late because I'm preparing for a Twin Peaks in my theory that it won't be any good. So I'm kind of delving into the David Lynch brain. So I'll be reviewing that. And then I got to say, there's a whole lot of nothing the rest of March until The Path comes out. And you know, that might be something that people will be interested in because it's, you know, you're finally bringing back Aaron from, I'm spacing his last name, Aaron from Breaking Bad. What's wrong with my brain?
I don't know. Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul, thank you.
Let's Google.
That's so bad. That's, did you Google it? It's good.
Yeah, I Googled it.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm sorry, that's on Hulu. So Aaron Paul comes back for that. And that's when I think people are going to be kind of interested in seeing whether the path is it will be worth their thing. But Aaron Paul is somebody, thankfully I've remembered his name now. Clearly have not had enough coffee. That's a show that people are going to want to check out because, you know, we love people from our favorite shows trying a new a new series. But that's about it. I don't think there's a whole there's a lot of stuff in March, but there's not a lot of stuff that people I think are going to be super interested in.
Right. Activity, but not necessarily a lot of exciting stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Want to do some letters?
Let's do that.
Okay. First, we're going to start off with some synergy here. Synergy and a tie-in. Steve in the 808.
Okay. Yes. Hawaii.
He has two items. Item number one, he says, I'm loving my Mack Weldon boxer briefs. There, I said it, and I'm proud. Thanks for the discount. You see, this episode of the TV Talk Machine is brought to you by Mack Weldon, which is better than whatever you're wearing right now. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. I went and bought some underpants. It's true. I said it too. Thank you, Steve in the 808. And socks. I love their stripy socks. They're so awesome. Super easy. Easy to check out. They ship right to your door. Really nice packaging, too. They're naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. They make you comfortable. And if you are not comfortable in your first pair from Mack Weldon, you can keep it and they'll refund your money. No questions asked. So you can take a chance on clothing on the internet and you will be safe. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and their shirts, they all look good, but they perform well too, whether you're working out, going to work, going out on a date, or just living your regular everyday life. So be like Steve in the 808. Go to MackWeldon.com. That's M-A-C-K, Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N.com, MackWeldon.com, and use promo code TVTalk, and like Steve in the 808, you will save 20%. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring TV Talk Machine, and thank you to Steve in the 808 for setting up that ad.
That was very nice.
Thank you, Steve. Steve also asks,
"Okay,
what does Tim know about Omar's new show on Sundance? Happen Leonard. Oh, look Happen at Leonard. That.
Mm-hmm. That's more synergy.
Look at that.
I like. So I haven't watched it because Dan, like I said earlier, Dan reviewed that. But I loved the promo of it or the extended reel that we saw at TCA in January. And the panel was great. Even though Omar was not there, the panel was great. And, Dan kind of liked it. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
All right. See, that's good.
I should also update, given my crazy flaky brain. Oh, see, there's synergy as well. That Flaked, which I said was the Mitch Hurwitz, series coming out on Netflix. It's Will Arnett. And, where I say,
you said Job, I knew who you meant.
You knew who I said. And I just wanted to remind people that when I'm down and I have that thing, like when I'm down at TCA and I'm watching panels, if it's a Wire character, or somebody from Breaking Bad or a famous show, I use their character names rather than their actor names just to humor myself. So I'm falling into that pattern.
Omar's new show on Sundance. Totally exactly. makes, I know what he means.
Right? Yeah.
I totally know what he means.
Yeah.
All right, Terry from the 314, but originally from Marin County. So, hey, Terry. He says, I'm watching the OJ miniseries on FX, and I'm wondering, who do you think is the best contemporary example of someone who had OJ's fame in the early 90s, a former sports star now well-known through movies, TV, or pop culture? What do you think? So, like, who would be today's, not in the murder part, but, like, who is there an analog today for somebody like OJ?
Yikes. I would say maybe the closest person to that is like The Rock.
I think that's a good one. Terry suggested The Rock or maybe Michael Strahan, which I don't know. What you miss with OJ when you liken those people to them is he was a big endorser and he was on Monday Night Football and he was in like other movies as a not very good actor, but
yeah,
he was
not very good comic actor.
He was in stuff. So, you know, I'm not sure who else you would say. It's not, you know, maybe, I gotta say, maybe like LeBron James, because OJ was, OJ was one of the great running backs of all time in the NFL. So in some ways, it's not that bad a parallel to have a great player like LeBron James, who also did lots of commercials, but was also in movies, or, you know, or somebody like Shaq back in the day was kind of like that.
Yeah. And the difference is, I think that those guys, that OJ was more, I mean, certainly more than The Rock, and certainly more, you know, than others. He was more of a pop culture sensation. I mean,
yeah.
Greatness aside, I don't think, other than what that Disney movie, I don't think Jordan actually did much. Right. I mean, he's legendary in and of himself, but he's living a much quieter life than OJ did.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine, a former colleague, who got picked up by OJ in an airport. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened, but she told me that he had his well rehearsed patter down, and this was like a year before he killed his ex wife. So
yikes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, he was working it. All right, Dean 707 update. He's in Louisiana. He watched an episode of Treme.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if Treme is not on there, he's in big trouble.
Right? And also that New Orleans episode of Togetherness.
Oh, yes.
And Dean says, as to his travel budget, because we were asking about that last time, he said, I'm sleeping on church bunk beds this week. So, you know, but some budget travel tips from Dean.
He could have watched the first season of True Crime? What am I saying?
I don't know.
True Detective. I'm at my peak on this episode of TVTM. Clearly,
you're a little frazzled. I think.
I am a little like, yeah. What is with that?
I don't know. It's early in the day. Here we go. William Blake Heron wrote in. Yes. Our friend, the creator of Agent X, just saying, I caught up on TVTM. If only I'd had the idea for the Agent X files sooner. Malcolm's magic iPad is reversed alien tech, and all those tunnels under Washington were carved by ancient astronauts, which would have solved the whole question that our listeners asked about the tunnels beneath Washington. So
that was awesome. Here's the thing I want to add to that, because I love that guy. You know, obviously more people watched the X-Files remake than they did Agent X, but like, really? I mean, Agent X was so much fun and had all the stuff going on with it, and now you have all you're basically the end product of the X-Files is this lump of what people said was like an awful, altogether awful, except for maybe the third episode, and to leave everybody on a cliffhanger, you know, and then there's these calls that Chris Carter shouldn't do the series anymore. Given that millions and millions of people watched it, if he wants it to come back, Fox, who only thinks about bottom line ratings, will do that. But, you know, I would have rather spent my time watching Agent X, which I did, rather than the X-Files.
I think you're right. We got some more X-Files notes here, so I should probably get them all out. Now, Brando in the 301 asked, is Chris Carter to the X-Files what George Lucas is to Star Wars? His episodes tend to do stuff us fans don't care about.
Right.
I tweeted a note to this, and I linked to, I think it was Alan Sepinwall wrote a piece about it. It's like, Chris Carter is just like George Lucas and Gene Roddenberry in that they are creators of phenomena that don't understand why people like them and mm-hmm. get a misguided idea of why they should, you know, what people want and why they should be successful. And the only solution is to take the toys away from them. And I don't know, talking to you about his failed Amazon show, I distinctly got the impression, I don't want to mischaracterize what you said, but I distinctly got the impression that kind of the only way for Chris Carter to work was to bring back the X-Files because he's mm-hmm. got a bit of a reputation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how do you pry it away from him? But it's very clear that the episodes that he wrote of this revival were terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I know that Matt Zollersites did a thing defending him, which I think that's he's indefensible. Other than the idea that you have to take their toys away from them, I mean, that's hard to do, right? I mean, he's the one who thought of it and he did a show.
I assume that he's got some sort of deal where he's got first look to do any, you know, future revivals, so they can't get rid of him. But it's a problem because it's very clear too that he was surrounded by, he had an initial idea that was a hit, and that was a good idea, good premise for a TV series back in the 90s when he had it, and he surrounded himself with people who were very talented and have gone on to do better things and other things, but they've all gone to do new things, and as far as I can tell, you know, with these six episodes, a couple of them parachuted back in to do a single episode. But, you know, there's no new blood. There's a whole generation of X-Files fans who are now TV writers who would probably put a really interesting spin on it. But it's almost like not enough time has passed for that to happen. So instead, we get kind of retread stuff. And it's a shame. It's a shame because I think it's a great premise. And I really like Duchovny and Anderson. I think she is a treasure. And I think Duchovny is just as laconic as he was in the 90s, where Mulder is always half asleep. And I actually kind of love that pairing. It's there's great chemistry there. And then the scripts are garbage. So what can you do?
Yeah. And not to be cynical, but it will come back.
Oh, so. Of course, because the ratings were good.
Yeah, fantastic.
And it seems well. And also, honestly, if you want Duchovny and Anderson back, I get the distinct impression that's another thing in Chris Carter's quiver, is that they're not gonna do it probably if they fired Chris Carter, right?
Right.
So
right.
We'll see it again. I actually hope. That what they do with the X-Files is bring it back and do more episodes and basically put the pressure on Carter to bring in some new blood to write some new episodes. So it's not just this victory lap for the people who were his producers back in the 90s. That would be good.
I 100,000% endorse that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, well, and then we got one more, and this is Jason, explain yourself, is basically what this letter is. It's from Alan.
My favorite.
Yeah, Alan in the 660. He says, Jason, you're one of the many X-Files fans who said they loved the third episode of the new miniseason. We are talking about the same thing, right? Please explain this to me because I don't get it. I was always a casual fan of the X-Files. I saw 5 or 10 episodes altogether. That's very casual, Alan.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I was left with a good impression as I did watch the movie they made after the series ended this run, and I liked that quite a bit. So when this hype about a new season came, I was very much interested. The third episode, everybody kept saying this is when it's going to get golden, so I skipped straight to it, and I just left thinking, what the heck did I just watch? Not only does that not comport with what I understood this franchise to be, I can't even believe it was an episode of television that someone put on a network in primetime in 2016. Is everyone playing an elaborate joke or something? I don't get it at all. Alan in the 660. Well, Alan, the X-Files was many things to many people. A lot of people really loved the conspiracy stuff. I loved the conspiracy stuff at the start, and then it kept going and they ran out of story and it became a convoluted mess, and Chris Carter thinks that's a good idea to continue that. That was a mistake. But in the X-Files, there were also a lot of great standalone episodes. My favorite ones were the ones written by Darren Morgan that were funny. They were funny. They commented on the format of the show. There was always kind of a wink to them, but they were also really well-written, kind of brilliantly executed episodes in their own right. I recommend you watch Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, which starred Peter Boyle. It is one of the best hours of TV you will ever see. You could also see Jose Chung's From Outer Space with Charles Nelson Reilly. Same thing. Amazing hour of TV.
Both great episodes.
What Mulder and Scully Meets the Weird Monster, not as good as any of Darren Morgan's episodes from the classic series, but it had its heart in the right place in the sense that it was funny and winking and was an interesting spin on some of those old horror tropes. In this case, it's a monster that gets bitten by a human and turns human, and I thought that was kind of a kick. It was not as good, just as the season was not as good as the X-Files in its prime, this was not as good as any of Darren Morgan's other episodes, and in fact was just a script from the Night Stalker remake on ABC that never got produced. And so they kind of brushed it up and turned it into this. But it was the best of the bunch, I would say. And it was the only episode of the six that really gave me that feeling of like, this is why we loved that show. And if as somebody who only saw 5 or 10 episodes, I guess it didn't, you didn't have those same sort of feelings that I did as somebody who watched it every, Friday or then Sunday night when it was on.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think to get the distinct... you have to marinate in the X-Files a lot more than 5 or 10 episodes. Right.
And the weird episodes only work on one level if you watch, 15 episodes where there's a killer in the forest that's some sort of ghost or alien, and then the weird episode happens and you're like, what just happened? And like it has a very strong effect as a change of pace, which is why it was probably in the middle of this 6-episode run. The same sort of feel that you want is to have that. And if you're just parachuting in for a few episodes here and there, you're not gonna have that same feeling.
Good defense of yourself.
All right, that's what I was thinking.
Very solid.
I don't think anybody is saying that it was actually like a fantastic episode of modern 2016 TV. It was just the best of a sad crop.
Yeah, best of that one for sure.
Yeah. All right, we got a great piece from Drew on Twitter, Drew Herrick on Twitter, who just wanted to link to a news report that somebody made about a new Nancy Drew TV series in which Nancy Drew is a mid-30s TV cop. And Drew dubbed this cop now a cop. not a cop now a cop. That's how he put it. Not a cop, yes. Now a cop. Nancy Drew, not a cop, and now she is a cop. So she is both cop and not a cop in one.
And we thought the spin on the idea could not be done anymore, that it had been done.
Well, you know, the appeal of Nancy Drew, girl detective, is that she's just another adult police person in a procedural. Of course. Right. That's perfect. Thank you, CBS. Brilliant.
I know. And then thank you, Fox. Let's make the devil a cop who helps the cop. He's a procedural guy. Oh, my God.
The devil fights crime. Why not? It totally makes sense. Our friend Steven in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, co-host of the Lazy Doctor Who podcast on this very network, wrote in to say, Doctor Who is moving from Netflix to Amazon Prime in the U.S. I think it was on, the new series was on like all of the streaming, and now it's going to be Amazon specific, and it's moving to Crave TV in Canada. Is this another sign of the Netflix exodus, where, you know, different networks and studios are taking their ball and going home? What do you think?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know the specifics of that deal and if that's what's happened, because as you know, I have a Doctor Who bubble that I put over myself to protect myself from letters when I get things wrong.
That's true. That's good.
So that's probably, I would love to see the actual business story about that. So it could be, I cannot say definitively. I would say though, that like of all the streaming services, when I talk to people, you know, it's kind of interesting to me, and this is maybe a side tangent, we can do something about this later, is like the people who find stuff on Amazon, they already have Amazon because of the 2-day shipping.
Yeah.
So they have Amazon Prime. I don't know a lot of people. In fact, it would be great amongst our listeners if they want to do that. And maybe I'll poll some people on Twitter. Like, has Amazon driven anyone to subscribe to the Amazon Prime for the shows who wasn't already there for the 2-day shipping? Because I'll go to Netflix and I'll do Hulu. And I'll do the Hulu thing where you don't have to pay for ads and they're kind of gouging me and all that stuff. But boy, I'm not sure I would, if I would, because I think it's $70+ to get Amazon Prime a year.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would normally do that, because I don't think there's that many stuff on Amazon other than, you know, Transparent and a few other things where you would just, oh, I got to have that. That's kind of interesting. But maybe in this case, because Doctor Who fans are so rabid, maybe that would happen. Maybe it would drive people there.
I think I like the idea in general. I mean, we talked about it with CBS threatening the, and CW threatening to pull its shows off of Netflix, that, you know, we're going to see stuff like this, but this strikes me as, you know, a little different in that it's an exclusive deal. So that sounds to me like they wanted, you know, they got more money. They felt like they were going to get more money selling it once exclusively to Amazon than they were going to get selling it three times to Hulu and Netflix and Amazon and, you know.
That makes sense.
More obviously. Power to them. I guess we're going to see some of that. I hate exclusive content deals because, you know, it means you got to subscribe to more things, but that's the game they play. So that's how the business is done.
That's how it happens.
All right. We got a good one here. It's Joaquin from the Tender Knob.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Formerly of the China Knob in the 415. Yeah. This is an OG letter writer.
OG letter writer from the original TVTM.
Oh, yeah. Joaquin says, thanks for the recommendation on Jane the Virgin. It's been fun to binge through season one and jump in on season two, something that my wife and I have been able to enjoy together. I have two questions for you this week. First, do you have any idea what Bill Simmons' show on HBO will be like?
I don't, actually. And part of that is, I'm sure that you could click on THR and we'd have some kind of, you know, skeletal story.
Are you recommending the use of a search engine, Tim?
Yeah, there you go. this is the throwback to the China. He'll like that. It's a throwback to the TVTM starter. I'm like, maybe we can throw it to Amber.
I wouldn't be surprised. Was that it? I forget. You had a catchphrase that involved not dispensing information.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
That's it. Okay.
if that's what it's like.
Whatever but no, that show I, might be.
It's funny because this is a slight detour, but it does make sense. Leslie Goldberg, who works for THR, and it's just, you know, when you're the news person at any one of these things, you're constantly on a treadmill. You're churning stories out all the time. And I retweet her stories all the time. And then we get together and talk, and she's like, so what did you think about, you know, the pilot for whatever that, and I was like, I never, ever read any of that stuff until it gets onto my, you know, I don't care what the idea is until I see it in a link or a disc where I actually have to review it. So I try to stay away from most stories about what the content is going to be, because who knows what's going to happen by then, especially in the early stages. And then I wait until I actually have to do it. So it's our running joke that everything she's writing about, I have disinterest in until it becomes manifested as a pilot on my desk. So
it's real.
Yeah.
And you can hold it in your hand.
It wouldn't surprise me if Bill Simmons' show was about something.
And Joaquin also asked, how interrelated are the various networks and channels a company might own? I asked because of Fox, which is notoriously despised in my neck of the woods because of Fox News, but gets some critical love because of FX. It's not often I know a TV exec's name, but I hear John Landgraf's name a lot. Also, if I recall correctly, the broadcast network Fox is noted for pushing the envelope when it comes to trashiness. And then there's Fox News. Is one person or board keeping an eye on all these channels, or are they basically operating independently?
That's a great question. And this is because of Fox News, I've had to deal with this question many times over the year. They are completely separate entities. And as far as, you know, an overlord, and you would say, oh, he's going to, you know, Rupert or whatever is going to have like control over all these people. I got to tell you, nobody goes, there is no connection. No one at Fox, at the network, other than knowing people casually at restaurants or who they are, or have met them on another project, they're not walking into FX and talking. No one from Fox News, I think if they went into the FX building in Beverly Hills, they would be, people would be like, who are you and what is it? You know, it's like, there is no interaction between these three entities at all. And there is no pressure. And people always say, oh, I'm sure Fox is putting pressure. I'm like, The Simpsons makes fun of Fox News more than anything. So there really is, they're all entities that are under the same corporate umbrella. But I can tell you that there is, and I know people always say, though, that can't be true. There is no editorial judgment on these three people. They're completely distinctly different.
All right, we've got an update from My Vogue on Poetry and the 716.
Yes.
MVP. Is there a show that you would have a hard time finding significant things to change? Or another way to ask this is, what is your perfect or near perfect show? He's following up on his question from last week about what frame of mind do you put yourself in to watch something critically. So is there something that you would say is sort of like a perfect show and you wouldn't change a thing? And he says, for me, it's Rectify. I would not change one slow burn second of it.
Interesting. That's wow. That is really interesting that it would be Rectify. Yeah, you know, I actually have thought about this because there's always something that you would do different, even if the show is, I mean, if you're looking at The Wire and Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and shows that we're going to put into the Hall of Fame for all time, you could kind of tinker with stuff like that. I mean, obviously, you would go and say, like, I'm not sure I would do that whole story arc in season 5 of The Wire. And, you know, I would be super nitpicky on something like Mad Men, where I'd say I would want to go back to Matt Weiner and say, why did you break your rule of not having contemporary music? He did it, I think, 3 times. And why did you do that? Like, it's, to me, that was so jarring, that when he used the Decemberists and other stuff, and why did that happen? So I would always have questions, and then you would have questions about, you know, like on Mad Men, you know, do we really have to have season 4 of Don, or whatever, keep doing it, all this stuff. So you would have these questions. The one show that I would not have any questions on, and you know, whenever I get into my defense of the top 3 to 5 shows, which I think Mad Men is number 1, by the way, the one that I would not have any thing to nitpick with is Breaking Bad, because I think I look at Breaking Bad as that series, to me, almost never took a misstep. Like, I can't tell you. I would say I wouldn't change a thing on that show. I thought that, and it was 5 seasons, and, you know, especially in the first 2 seasons where people were thinking, I would change this. Are you, to me, I'm like, are you kidding me? There's not a misstep in that. And then 3 becomes brilliant. I just wouldn't change anything about Breaking Bad. So that's probably the only one that I would not nitpick, other than, you know, maybe, because I joked about this, that with Vince Gilligan live in San Francisco, that I probably, well, so here I am saying I do have a nitpick. I probably would have killed Walt Jr. And I thought for sure he was going to die. I thought it was the sins of the father thing was going to come on him and he would die. And I kind of wish that actually had happened, because it would have been more very painful for Walt to have to see the sins of the father moment on the son. And I thought he was ripe for taking out, you know, Walt Jr. So that, maybe that's my one gripe, but otherwise Breaking Bad is amazing.
All right, we got two more letters. Mm-hmm. Megan from the 402
nice.
Wrote in. Mm-hmm. This is also a Jason, what are you thinking letter, by the way.
But those are rapidly becoming my favorite ones.
They're rising, yeah, I'm sure. She says, I have to disagree. The main problem of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Legends of Tomorrow is the lack of a main character. There have been successful genre shows without a clear main character, like the various Star Treks, like Captain Kirk, and the captains of the Star Treks are the main character, and the Stargates, Richard Dean Anderson. I disagree, Megan. I think those had strong central characters with a strong ensemble around them. That was sort of what I was saying. She says, I think the problem, because she is still trying to do some failure analysis, which I really appreciate, is the lack of an organic way to start the action every episode, which would explain why is the first 30 minutes terrible and then it gets interesting. On Star Trek or Stargate, the basic plot for each episode was the premise of the show, exploring new planets. This is true. You would literally see the Enterprise around a planet, or the Stargate would open and they'd step through and there's a plot. All kinds of stories could be told around that idea. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started with a premise like that, but never delivered, cleaning up after the superpowered. Now they basically have to come up with new reasons for this group to stay together and new things for them to do every episode. Same thing with Legends of Tomorrow. Defeating Vandal Savage is a good long season arc, but the endless explanations of how each episode relates to defeating him are tedious and don't really make sense. There needs to be more going on than just defeating one guy. I almost wish the Time Masters people would accept the team into their fold and give them missions. Yes. Then each episode would have a natural MacGuffin, and the plot and personality conflicts could naturally arise from that. Any thoughts on MacGuffins? I really hope they figure something out for Legends of Tomorrow. I love Ray Palmer and Leonard Snart, but it's getting harder and harder to care about the show. I have one thought about MacGuffins, which is there was a character referred to on Brooklyn Nine-Nine this week who is MC Guffin, and I laughed out loud. My wife and I both had to pause the DVR because of MC Guffin. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, this is you can't spend 30 minutes trying to explain how your plot fits into the complicated premise of your show. It's just, no, it's a killer.
It's you can't do that. That's a non-starter, but I like that you got a little feisty in defending yourself. That's good.
But I do agree with her point that it's absolutely true. The premise of Star Trek is, look, the ship is around a planet and they're going to go see what's on the planet. And the premise of Stargate was slightly different. It was, oh, they step through this thing and they're on another planet and the plot is on the other planet. It's super simple and you can understand it. And this is like, well, we got a ship, but it goes through time and not just space. And we got to find a guy, but we can't kill him. but we could kill him maybe at some point, but it would change the future. But maybe that's okay. And oh, now people are punching each other. And the show finally got good because punching is fun. That's funny. Legends of Tomorrow. Okay, one last note. This is David in the 336. That sounds like a fake area code to me, but it does add up.
Oh, right? The 336.
3 plus 3 equals 6. It's North Carolina.
Wow. Okay, God's country.
North Carolina. NBC has announced a fourth installment of the Chicago franchise. That means we could conceivably have 88 hours of Dick Wolf procedurals next year, and that's not even counting SVU. I'm wondering what level of hell Tim would consider it having to review all 88 hours. That's an inner circle, isn't it? That's it. Like, you're with like the Popes who sinned, who are like their legs are up in the air and they're stuck in the ground.
Yeah.
Right?
That's where Dante says, no, too much.
That's right. That is a horror so great I cannot even conceive it.
It's too much.
I'm trying to sell books here, people.
there's a Dick Wolf level in the Inferno. And he was like, no, I don't even, that is unimaginable.
Yeah.
what can happen.
They go past in the Inferno as they're moving toward the center. They go past a door that just says Dick Wolf on it, and they look at it and go, "Nope, moving on."
That'd be a good joke.
Too horrible even to mention. All right, that's all the letters. I guess we're done. I should give people the numbers because more people send us feedback when I give the numbers, and
that's not a bad idea.
And sometimes I forget.
Yes.
So here's how you can reach us.
I forgot names today, so that's okay.
All right. Well, I got the numbers down. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can tweet us @TVTM. You can also tweet us directly. Tim is Bastard Machine, and I am Jay Snell on Twitter. You can also visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are all ways that you can reach us and post things. And then I compile those just before we start our worldwide broadcast. And then I read them on the air. And when I'm done reading them on the air, I read the numbers, which I just read. So there you go.
We
caught it all the way back up.
We did. Can I just say one thing? This is my favorite part.
The best part of the show is after we're done and I'm ready to say goodbye and you're like, oh, yeah, I've got one more thing.
Yeah, that's
it's
my
like
favorite
you're
part.
Like Columbo. You are like, this is like our cliffhanger of the simultaneous worldwide release.
And I know that because I know.
I hate to bother you, but I know you just read the numbers, but I got one more thing. I neglected to mention it. Just one more question.
Oh, and I get joy from it because I know it probably drives you batshit. It's like, Tim, we were out.
Nope.
We were just out. But I did want to say that on Twitter, and as you remember, somebody, I forgot his name because I didn't do the prep work because you do all the heavy lifting and I don't remember names, but somebody said they gave us a sign of Elvis Costello's book where he says that worldwide simultaneous release of music.
Oh,
and
yes.
He says, I could read this, and he put a little, in his book, parentheses around it and said, this made me think of the podcast. Worldwide simultaneous release.
I know. And I mentioned that, Elvis Costello's favorite place to visit in the Bay Area is Mellow Park.
Right,
that's
which was a throwback to way back.
That's a classic old TVTM reference. Okay, well, since I've got one more letter that I didn't read, but I'm going to read now. It's not really a letter; it's a picture that was tweeted to us by Hobo Eric.
And it is
a can of gluten-free lager from Hobo Beer. He said it makes this hobo happy. It's actually Hobo Beer, and it's written on the side. It says, "Ride your train respectfully. Help fellow hobos. You may need them someday. Don't leave garbage when you're jungling. And when in town, always respect local laws." Those are the hobo laws from Hobo Eric.
Hobo Beer, too. Oh, my God.
I know.
It's a thing. That is a thing.
It is a thing.
It's a thing.
All right. And we will be back with more simultaneous worldwide release podcasting next week. But until then, thanks to everybody out there for listening. And Tim, thank you. It's a pleasure, as always.
All righty.
Bye, everybody.